Our talk for tonight is called Humility, Hierarchy, and the Aquarian Age. And we'll review. What we're trying to do is understand Aquarius and the Aquarian Age so that we can work in harmony with the times and we can fulfill more easily the purposes of the evolutionary creation of which we are part. And it's a very difficult thing to study one thing by itself, to know the whole thing by itself alone, and it's usually much easier in terms of education to compare something or contrast something with other things. And so what we're doing is we are taking each sign of the zodiac, and we are on the basis of that sign relative to Aquarius, we're trying to get an understanding of our transition into the Aquarian Age. When we do that with each sign, we take a very few simple principles that relate to that sign, and from them relate it to Aquarius. And we're using the astrological mandala in order to come to that end. And the astrological mandala is a very compound, complex symbol of the entire universe. But it's a symbol of the entire universe in astrological terms, which means that there are several layers of complexity to get at the reality. It's all helpful, and it's a fun thing to do, but I don't know that it is the best way to go about it. In the astrological mandala, all of the elements of astrology are in standard position. Constellations are lined up with the signs, and the signs are lined up with the houses, and all of the planets are in their sign of rulership, and implicit in the whole structure is the aspects. So when everything is all lined up in the standard position, it's like the tumblers of a safe, and we hope that they're lined up so that we can open up and get at the truth of things. What we're trying to do is understand the basic divine intents and the underlying relationships of things in the cosmos. If we can understand them more clearly, we can live more clearly, and this is a much better way of going about it than looking at many, many horoscopes. We're looking at the raw materials or source material directly. In our last talk, we noted the relationship of the first cusp and the first house to the cusp and house that came after it and the cusp and house that came before it. And we noted that there were very dramatic changes from one sign to the next or from one cusp to the next. The most dramatic changes in all of astrology come about from adjacent signs. For example, if you take Cancer, just as an example, Cancer is an emotional and sentimental sign. And it's plopped right between Gemini, which is sort of airy and indifferent about things, and it's certainly not at all sentimental. And then on the other side, it's wedged in between Leo, which is not at all sentimental either, and it demands that things be done one way or another. So what we noted is that the irrepressible driving force that is Aries becomes bedrock resistance when it becomes Taurus. And in relation to Pisces, Pisces is more like a resistless mist that Taurus resists energy and Pisces gives in to energy, so that the relationship between the signs on either side of Aries each use a different philosophy. Now, we saw that whether it is the consolidation of responsibility that happens when you pass from the first house to the second house, or whether it is being under the weight of a whole cycle of energy as the 12th house is, either of those two houses represented a basic change of state. And that's what the semi-sextile represents, is a change of state. And the most basic changes of state are consolidation, or what you could call deconsolidation. Now, the image that we used when we talked about consolidation or deconsolidation is an image that relates to form and to stuff and to matter. But when we're studying history or when we're studying cosmological history, we're thinking in terms of time and not in terms of space. And so what we concluded last time is that corresponding to the semi-sextile is a change of state in time. Meaning to say that from the past there is always a buildup that pushes us into the future, and whether we like it or not, because if we try to repress it, it just pushes harder. And we noted that the future has a quality about it that pulls us forward. So the fundamental changes of state in time are brought about by push and pull, working at the same time on the present, or quotidianously or synchronously, I don't know how to say it. Relative to Aquarius, the push comes from Pisces, because with the precession, we're going backwards through the zodiac. We're looking at history. And the pull from the future comes from Capricorn. And in order to understand the pull of the future, we're going to look at some basic ideas of Capricorn. And the ideas that we're going to look at are the ideas of humility and hierarchy. And we're going to do that in a rather miscellaneous manner. This is not an especially coherent talk. It's going to be all over the place. Now, when we think about terms like humility and hierarchy, it seems almost impossible that they would be associated with the same sign, because humility is so willing to take a back seat, but when you think about hierarchy, you think of social stratification and elitism and all of those kinds of things. But that's one of the things of astrology, that the seed of something that seems opposite, a thing and its opposite, are both found in the same sign. It's very much like the yin and the yang, the Tao symbol. Each of them, the yin or the yang, has the opposite, the seed of the opposite within it, so that there is no such thing as an unbalanced opposition, that you can only go so far in one direction without being pulled back the other direction, because the seed of the opposite is within that. All right, so now we want to understand hierarchy, and the first way we're going to begin to understand hierarchy or humility is through the study of simplicity and simplification. Concentration and simplicity have always been associated with Capricorn. It's like a crystal. In a crystal, things, the atoms, are put together in the simplest way possible. And they, when they're in the simplest manner that they can be put together, they are the most concentrated that they are. And the consequence is that a crystal is highly organized. And everything becomes crystal clear because of that organization. So it is seen in the simplicity and the simplification of the 10th house as much as in Capricorn. For example, For example, the 10th house rules professionals, and professionals know how to cut corners and to do it with the least amount of effort. They know how to do that kind of simplification. and they get to be top dog by being able to have the smallest margins of error, which means they simplify things the most. Geez, we're already 3/4 done. So, whether one becomes a professional or whether pure carbon becomes a diamond, that takes time. And time has always been associated with Capricorn. It is one of those things that if you read history, especially if you read the great historians like Cornelius Tacitus, he points out clearly how people get exactly what they need at exactly the right time, and he takes relish in the fact that tyrants get their comeuppance as they should. So it's gratifying the way things happen in time, and they happen with a marvelous punctuality. They happen exactly when they are needed to happen. So for myself, I have found out that the Capricorn principles of concentration and simplification and hierarchy have been revealed to me in various ways, and most of them were humiliating. I remember the last time I gave these talks, I was sharing a kitchen with a couple of elegant French women. And when we would prepare our meals, we would be starting with really simple things, but mine remained simple all the way to the end, including the eating, whereas their simple meals, starting with the same simple elements, ended up being very sumptuous. And that was one example of simplicity. But we did a lot of talking while we were cooking together, and it brought to mind the first time I began to understand simplicity in terms of time in history. At one time, I worked at a spiritual center where the basic business of the center was conducted. And I was a very young person when I was there. And when I gave these talks the last time, it was at that same location. It was the headquarters of the Rosicrucian Fellowship. But when I was a young man and I was there working, I was just filled with the spirit of mysticism, and I was filled with enthusiasm, and I was irrepressible. All you had to do was push a button, and I couldn't stop talking about it. And at that young age, I realized that I could do anything. And I believed that with regard to spirituality, I could do everything. And so I had a certain amount of illusion or a certain amount of delusion. And time has rubbed off some of the hard corners, and I still understand that I can do anything. But I also realize that I can't do everything. Time just does not allow us to do everything because we have to be sequential. And time also produces its own kind of pressure with regard to the spiritual path, with to becoming and unfolding our divinity. Paul tells us it's like running a race, that as time goes on, we become increasingly aware of how precious time is and how much time it takes to develop things. Just in developing a simple prayer life, it has taken years and years and years to make just a very little advance in all of that. So when we're young, we have this feeling of a physical immortality. Death just isn't something that we think about. And we consider that there is time for everything. But the farther we go in life, the more we are brought to humility, because we look at the fruits of the things we've accomplished, and they haven't been that much, and they haven't been that great. And we realize that we are subject to the same mortality as everyone else is, and the same limitations of the material world, and that is a humbling experience. So what happens if we are true to the spiritual path? As time goes on, we simplify. We discard the things that are more extraneous and the things that are more insignificant. We realize that some things are more important in life. So we have an understanding of priority. We know that there's a lot that we don't know. As we get older, that's another part of the humility. But we concentrate and specialize on the things that we know that are important for us to accomplish, and not trying to accomplish everything. So that's a very simple example of the relationship between humility and hierarchy. Some things are more important than others, and we learn to simplify and concentrate on them. And if we don't do that in humility, or if we don't do that humbly, we are humiliated. Life is like that. You know, I'm not going to be one of those old people who wear stretch pants or something like that. All right. However it is stated, what we have stated, it's pretty much personal to me. I've tried to generalize it to the principle, but we want something more than that, because we're talking about the Aquarian age, and we're talking about the mandala, which means we're talking about the entire cosmos. So we want something bigger, and that means a story, a myth, a story about the gods. Now, in most societies in the Western world, especially in what is called the Indo-European peoples, most of the societies or civilizations had the same gods. They had the same characters to their gods.